Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, June 27th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Senator Mike Lee goes for a third attempt to sell public lands, and KMUD's third annual Southern Humboldt Pride is tomorrow. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. KMUD News spoke with Edward Swafford, a meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Eureka, to bring you the latest weather update.
We have a possibility, a decent chance of what we think will be dry lightning occurring possibly right around Monday, Tuesday. Looking more like the afternoon and Monday. Just right around noontime in Trinity County, maybe northeastern Humboldt, like Wichipec and Orleans around the area. Willow Creek to be included as well.
Although talks of lightning strikes and thunderstorms, Swafford tells us to expect dry storms this weekend.
We're seeing a little bit of moisture in the mid-levels, which I don't believe will precipitate into a shower, but this could lead chance to possibly charging the atmosphere, at least for static, so that there could be some thunderstorm activity. And that would be a dry thunderstorm, as it would not produce precipitation. This would be equally chances dangerous because of the season. Most of the fuels for fires are beginning to cure, especially fine fuels. 1,000-hour fuels, 100-hour fuels are also getting closer to being cured as far as being, ignitable and also being able to sustain fires over a larger, longer amount of time. So this does bring a bit of a concern. Now, our confidence on this happening is not pushing us towards a red flag at this time. But it is something that we have to keep an eye on, as temperatures are also increasing, through the next couple of days, and conditions are drying out.
Swafford gives us some tips on how to be cautious this weekend.
Well, if you're towing a trailer, I would say to be mindful of chains dragging. Just even the spark just from like a trailer could, especially with the fine fuels that I was mentioning previously, those are definitely ignitable. And if you look on the sides of the highways and the roads, you'll see what I mean by fine fuels. That's the blondish grass that you see growing. Also, I would say for like overheating cars, be careful pulling them off and onto grassy areas, as that would also be ignitable as well. Throwing cigarettes or whatever ignitable things, fireworks, what have you, anything combustible like that that you don't have positive control of can get out of hand. This includes fires. If you're camping, you got fires, there's usually fire warnings in designated camping areas, so be mindful of that as well. Dumping your ashes and not, putting water over them and making sure that they're secure. Yeah, that's definitely something to be mindful of. I'd say also for water activities, be very careful. It's still kind of early season, really, even though we're still kind of in the beginnings of summer. This is still kind of a cold water kind of a season still. Even though the flow is starting to kind of go down, I'm starting to see some of the flows for the Ill River and stuff are starting to go down, but the water can still be dangerous, when it's cold. So be mindful of that as well. Also, if you're near the ocean, they usually say, to not turn your back to the ocean. And this is because, anything could happen. There's a lot of timber and down trees and stuff in the water, and they tend to, they can be carried over, washed over people or roll over folks. But also sneaker waves. We don't really have any sneaker wave threats, but the ocean, it can be unpredictable at times, even when it's not a sneaker wave. You can be knocked off balance, especially at steep beaches.
For more information on this weekend's forecast or future forecasts, visit www.weather.gov/EKA. On June 26, 2025, at approximately 2:30 p.m., deputies from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office conducted a follow-up investigation related to a burglary and stolen vehicle report filed on June 25th. 2025, it was reported the stolen vehicle had entered the parking lot of the Dollar General store in McKinleyville. Deputies responded to the location and reviewed surveillance footage, which confirmed that the suspect, later identified as Justin Raymond Stephenson, 35, of McKinleyville, was operating the stolen vehicle prior to the deputies' arrival. Deputies proceeded to Stephenson's residence, where they located the stolen vehicle, Pursuant to the terms of his probation, a search was conducted, resulting in the recovery of multiple items of stolen property linked to the burglary. Stephenson was arrested and booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility on charges of burglary and possession of stolen property. The stolen vehicle and recovered property were returned to the victim. Anyone with information about this case or related criminal activity is encouraged to call the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251 or the Sheriff's Office Crime Tip Line at 707-268-2539. The provision liquidating millions of acres of public lands with no public process, no public input, and no environmental review led many citizens to call the representatives and senators and was able to get the provision to sell these public lands and removed from the bill. KMUD News covered this topic just less than 24 hours after the announcement from the Trump administration that they would be rescinding a roadless rule that protects America's oldest growth forests. We spoke with Helen O'Shea, the California State Director for the Wilderness Society, about the next steps and what the response will be to Senator Mike Lee of Utah's Senate version of the budget reconciliation bill.
Fortunately, thanks to the good work of lots of citizens who called their representatives all over the country, the provision for a forced sale of public lands was removed from the House of Representatives version of that bill. So that was the good news. The bad news followed pretty quickly when Senator Lee from Utah reintroduced the concept in the Senate version of the budget reconciliation bill. And this one thing I think it's important to note is that the budget reconciliation bill is absolutely an inappropriate vehicle for having any kind of conversation about the disposal of public lands. And the scale and scope of what Senator Lee was trying to do is completely unprecedented.
O'Shea explains that the July 4th deadline for this bill to be done and on the president's desk is not mandatory and, quotes, it's artificially created. Here is where the public land stands in regards to the decision to remove the sale of the public lands.
Sure. And I will note that that July 4th deadline is an artificially created deadline. There is no legal or legislative mandate to rush things through by July 4th, which is another strange part of this process as it's unraveling. So where we stand now is the first attempt to put the public land sales back in the Senate version was actually rejected by the Senate parliamentarian. The reasons for that decision are not made public. That's just how that process works.
Senator Lee has written three versions of his provision within 10 days in hopes it can pass to be authorized to sell. The Wilderness Society is now focused on how to understand this new change.
So a small defeat was handed to Senator Lee. What's happening right now is that he is working on a third version. So for the third time in 10 days, he's trying to sell off our public lands. We know a little bit about some of the changes that he's made. We know that he's taken all the Forest Service lands off the table. So what we're looking at now is the potential sale of Bureau of Land Management lands. And he has put a very vague and as of yet not defined criteria on top of that, which says he wants to look at lands that are within 5 miles of a population zone. That is not a defined term in legislative terms. It's not defined illegally. We don't know what that means. So that makes it really hard to know exactly what lands we're now talking about. We do know that it's roughly up to 1.2 million acres of public lands at this point are still on the table. We also know that if we are looking at lands that are close to population centers and 5 miles is really close, that you know these are our gateways to the outdoors. These are the local trailheads we use after work around the weekends with our friends and family. These are places that are critically important to the folks who live in communities and to the visitors who come and support the businesses that rely on outdoor recreation. So honing in on places that are really beloved and close to home, Senator Lee is not fooling anyone. He's not giving up on this, but we also need to not give up on our fight.
There has been a major uproar on this new order from the Trump administration. not just those who are politically left-leaning, but those who are politically right-leaning. In an interview with NPR, Kirk Siegler, a journalist for NPR, said this, in quote, "I mean, I think one way I'd answer that is that things have changed. You know, public lands in the modern West are really woven into a kind of everyday life here, and the economy, you know, whether it be for hiking, fishing, gathering firewood, and even running cattle, logging, people depend on them, and sportsmen groups that tended to be more conservative have lately crossed over to join liberals to fight for public lands. And there's a huge opposition today, even to limited sales like we're seeing, because they think it's going to set a precedent to start selling even more land," end quote.
I will say there's still widespread opposition across the Intermountain West, including Montana. So again, this effort to somehow try to pull the wool over everyone's eyes, it's just failing. I mean, people are pretty clear-eyed and they know what's happening here. And we've got senators in both parties. We've got representatives in both parties. This is absolutely a bipartisan issue.
A big fear for many is the selling of these lands to be used for a billionaire tax cut or alleged affordable housing. O'Shea explains that there is a legal process to this and what is going on now is not how it should be taken care of.
Yeah, I think one thing that folks need to sort of keep in mind is that both the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management have public and transparent processes to dispose of lands if there really is a need to do so. If a community identifies a need that might be served by federal public lands, there is a process for that. And it's open and it has public input and it has environmental review and it has accountability. What we're looking at in this proposal, it's really just a land grab. And there's absolutely no guarantee that these lands would be used for any community benefit, for anything related to housing, for anything related to wildfire protection. They could very well be developed as McMansions by someone who comes there once or twice a year and has no connection to the community and no real knowledge of how to steward the property. So I think the conception that somehow this is a good idea and it's being proposed in a rational way is just not factually accurate.
Once public lands are sold, they're sold for good. This could be the trailheads in your own backyard. O'Shea encourages those who want to make a change to keep calling your senator and representatives.
That's a great question. And the public has done an amazing job really across the country, and they need to keep calling their senators and representatives and say, our elected officials need to oppose the forced sale of public lands. We will not stand for this. I know we as Californians take great pride in our public lands. People across the country take great pride in the public lands in their states that could be impacted by this. Folks visit us from across the world. So I think we really need to stand up for this in principle and then in reality. Once these places are gone on our public lands, they're gone for good. If you go down to your local trailhead and there's a no trespassing sign, you know, it's too late. So I think people have been doing really an amazing job. We're hearing that offices on the Hill and offices in local districts are just getting flooded with calls. This has really activated folks in a way that sort of few issues have in recent years when we're talking about public lands.
For more information on the sale of your public lands, visit www.wilderness.org. There you can find an interactive map where you can see federal public lands or BLM lands, plus a table of how many acres in your state might be at risk of being sold. Again, this information can be found at www.wilderness.org. The Southern Humboldt Pride's third annual KMED Celebration of Love and Inclusion takes place this weekend at the Mateel Community Center. Youth and journalism intern Julian Jackson reports.
Tomorrow, on Saturday, June 28th, KMUD will be hosting its third annual Southern Humboldt Pride Celebration at the Mateel Community Center. This all-ages event will take place from 1 to 9 p.m. when it becomes 18 and over until 1 a.m. For more information, I spoke with co-coordinator and former KMUD member coordinator Dorothy Schaefer.
And tomorrow I'll hold the entrance merchandise membership table. You may have heard on the air that's my last week at KMUD. I'm going back to Europe, so I'll be glad to see you. Come and say hello. It's going to be colorful. There's going to be some green, some pink, some purple coming out of the kitchen. Very creative stuff. And Kaymud is super happy to share the space tomorrow with many local nonprofits who wanted to be here to celebrate Pride. So we're going to have Queer Humboldt as our main sponsor, but we're also going to have Black Humboldt, Soam Health, the poets of the Reflections Collective from Arcata and Eureka, the L Word. Do you guys know that Humboldt has a lesbian magazine? This is the L Word. They're going to be there. And also, you know, some jewelry makers, some painting, some clothing, everything made by our queer community. So thank you so much for everybody who's going to be here. We hope to see you there.
The all-ages portion of the event will be emceed by Sister Gaia T of the Eureka chapter of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. With speakers, poets, panels, and drag queens and kings sprinkled throughout a diverse array of live music, including R&B by Chi, Swingo Domingo with jazz, protest bangers with Harmonic Howl, ukulele comedy by Corinna Slade, punk rock opera by Hera Has a Heart, rock and roll with Redwood Revolution, and legendary folk punk band Profane Sass, whose band member Nico talks about the intersection of this year's theme, Pride is a Riot Girl.
Anti-authoritarian and inclusive, and that's part of the punk mentality, is that everyone's invited to the table and that everyone is welcome.
And some newer bands will be in attendance as well, with the newest of all being Harmonic Howl. Here's Ruby Ruth, guitarist and more for the trio.
I've come out recently-ish, and I've never been to a Pride event before, and it feels really important to me because I haven't really felt that safe to be at Pride events. What helped me when I was coming out and finding my gender identity was like taking time with myself, and it sounds maybe a little bit cheesy, but learning how to like trust myself and my own intuition, and learning how to really understand who I am and trusting my own self and not letting other people's opinions of me get in my head, finding people that feel safe to me and being willing to let go of people who were stuck in an old story of me that served them. So just trusting that people who really support you will come in right after that.
And Beth Isbell of the band Redwood Revolution had this to say about the celebration.
We are revolutionaries of love and music, and it's important to me to play Pride shows because I'm transgender, and, you know, it's just beautiful recognition of acceptance of otherness. So it's going to be great, you know, people in costumes, food, drink, great music, you know, samba and dance and costumes everywhere. So it's going to be a fun time for, and it's for the whole family too, you know. You don't have to be gay or lesbian or whatever to come down. You can be straight as an arrow and still celebrate.
With the first part of the event being all ages, it will also feature a kids zone hosted by the Spoon Circus. I spoke to a member, Cal, to learn more.
So kids can go to the Spoon Circus to expect games and fun ways of interacting. I mean, we're really there just to facilitate play, but we're also there to teach if anybody wants to learn how to do specific props and different, like, clowning things. Anybody from 2 to 99 can show up and play.
On social media, there's been criticism that this event is open to all ages. However, Southern Humble Pride founder and former KMUD news director Lauren Schmidt created this event in response to local youth growing up in a rural community, leading to feelings of isolation without forward-facing queer representation, which is an extreme concern considering that, according to the Trevor Project, Two-Spirit LGBTQ plus young people are more than four times likely to face suicide than their peers, which was seen as a call to action to create this all-ages event of love and acceptance. And the Spoon Circus certainly agrees.
Especially if they are trans or gay, like, it's really important for them to see other people openly existing in that way. I feel like it would have been so important for me as a kid to be able to see that And I just want to be able to share like trans joy and queer joy to any kid who really needs it in their life.
This event not only supports our vibrant local queer community, but your local community radio station, KMUD. You can find more information on that and this event at kmud.org. I've been Julian Jackson, Youth and Journalism Intern for KMUD News.
In national news, nations gather for UN Oceans Conference as reports say CO2 emissions are making oceans more acidic. KPFA's Christina Anastad reports.
The report, Ocean Acidification, Another Planetary Boundary Crossed, finds ocean acidification is increasing at alarming rates, what authors say is a ticking time bomb for marine ecosystems and coastal economies. Ocean acidification is largely caused by the burning of fossil fuels, which releases carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that the ocean absorbs. The report finds as that amount has increased, so too has ocean acidification, impacting underwater ecosystems, including tropical ones and deep sea coral reefs that provide essential habitat and nursing refuge for many species. It also affects bottom-dwelling creatures like crabs, sea stars, and other shellfish. And the areas most affected include the North and South Pole, and the west coast of North America, specifically upwelling regions like California and near the equator. The report comes as world leaders are gathering for the United Nations Ocean Conference, where efforts are underway to create a high seas treaty for ocean protection. Speaking at the second day of the gathering, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned the planet is on the brink of a climate change tipping point.
There is a tipping point approaching, beyond which recovery may become impossible. And let us be clear, powerful interests are pushing us towards the brink. We are facing a hard battle against a clear enemy. Its name is greed. Greed that sows doubt, denies science, distorts truth, rewards corruption, and destroys life for profit. We cannot let greed dictate the fate of our planet.
He urged passage of a treaty on curbing ocean plastic pollution. Others are looking at the High Seas Treaty to protect marine biodiversity in international waters that make up nearly two-thirds of the ocean and nearly half the surface of the planet. Until now, there's been no comprehensive legal framework to create marine protected areas or enforce conservation on the high seas, which are under growing pressure from overfishing, fossil fuel-caused climate change, and the threat of deep-sea mining. Hilda Hine is president of the Republic of Marshall Islands. They're among the low-lying Pacific states disproportionately impacted by climate change and sea level rise.
There is no climate action without ocean action. The ocean is bearing the brunt of our failure to address climate change and transition away from fossil fuels. We cannot afford to risk the ocean's capacity to absorb carbon. That's why RMI announced yesterday our support for a moratorium on seabed mining. A ban is the safest choice for nature, marine life, climate stability, and us all.
Ocean acidification is one of nine planetary boundaries scientists have established to define a livable planet. The new report on ocean acidification finds its levels have surpassed the threshold of a healthy ocean, making it the seventh out of nine planetary boundaries that have been crossed. USA Greenpeace says it's a sign real change is needed from the Oceans Conference, noting the United States, which hit a record high in oil production last year, is absent from it, with the Trump administration declining to participate. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
This is the KMUD News Sports Report for June 26. Ray Hamill brings us details of all of this week's big local sports stories.
The Humboldt Crabs are back on the North Coast this weekend after a big road trip last week and a much improved start to the Pacific Empire League. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Crabs in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest American Legion baseball and why it has been a very good season so far for one local team, who have been named the Humboldt Sports Baseball and Softball Players and Coaches of the Year, how College of the Redwoods and Cal Poly Humboldt are joining forces to help local coaches, and why it was one of the biggest weekends of the season at the Redwood Acres Raceway. But first up, the Humboldt Crabs enjoyed a much better start to this year's Pacific Empire League than they did a year ago. For the second straight summer, the Crabs faced a challenging road trip to open league play last week. But unlike last year, when they dropped their opening six league games at Healdsburg and Lincoln, this year the Crabs split those six games, including taking a weekend series against Lincoln. On Friday night, the Crabs opened their series against the Lincoln Potters with a 5-3 win before dropping game two of the series the following night, 8-5. But the Crabs would respond with a dominating victory in the series decider on Sunday night and ran out to a 14-5 win. They trailed 5-4 going into the sixth, but scored 10 unanswered runs late in the game to pull out an impressive 9-run win. The victory lifted the Crabs to 3-3 in the PEL and 15-3 overall. The Potters, who came into the series riding a 14-game winning streak, dropped to 2-2 and 17-3. Despite dropping their series last week against the Prune Packers in Healdsburg, where they won one of three games, it was a good road trip for the Crabs nonetheless. The local club returns to the North Coast this week and will play the Potters once again this weekend, this time at the Arcata Ballpark. The three-game series gets underway on Friday night, with first pitch set for 7 p.m, with game two on Saturday night and game three on Sunday afternoon. In local American Legion baseball, meanwhile, it has been a very good start to the season for the Northern Humboldt Giants, and that continued to be the case last weekend. The Giants hosted their own three-day, eight-team tournament and won all three of their games to take the championship. With the three wins, the Giants improved to 12-1. They defeated Siskiyou 12-2 in five innings in Sunday's tournament final. McKinleyville's Hunter Carper, who is enjoying an outstanding summer season with the team, hit two home runs over the weekend, including a grand slam in the team's opening game against Red Bluff. Another local team, Wild Cactus Baseball 15Us, also were in action at the tournament. Despite being a last-minute addition to the field after another team dropped out, the young Wild Cactus players impressed by winning two of their three games, including rallying for a 9-5 win over the Southern Humboldt 76ers on Sunday. The Humboldt Eagles 19Us were also in action over the weekend, traveling to play some games in Petaluma. On Saturday, the Eagles dropped two games, falling 11-7 to Yolo Post 77 in eight innings, and also losing 15-6 to the Leghorns Academy. The Eagles 19Us feature an all-star roster of players from throughout the county. Many of the local Legion teams will be back in action this weekend when they travel to play at the annual and much-anticipated Reno Summer Tournament. Also in local sports this week, South Fork's Lisa Todd has been named the 2025 Humboldt Sports Softball Coach of the Year after a big season in the dugout for the Cubs. Todd led a young South Fork team to a first Little Four championship in 35 years, and has the program poised to dominate the Little Four over the next few years, with several talented freshmen and sophomores on hand this year. Arcata High School's Troy Gazzetti was named Baseball Coach of the Year after another big run in the North Coast Section playoffs. Gazzetti and his players saved their best for last. After finishing fourth in the Big Five and not even qualifying for the HDNL postseason Charles Lakin tournament, Gazzetti and the Tigers won four straight section playoff games on the way to clinching a fourth section crown in eight postseasons. The Humboldt Sports Baseball and Softball Teams of the Year awards went to both Del Norte programs. The Del Norte baseball team ended an 11-year wait for a conference title, while the Del Norte softball team won a third straight Big Five championship. The Baseball and Softball Players of the Year, meanwhile, both also went to Del Norte. Senior pitcher Preston Daniels took home the baseball award, while senior shortstop Chloe Smith was named Softball Player of the Year. Elsewhere in local sports this week, the Cal Poly Humboldt and College of the Redwoods athletic departments are joining forces to present a free coaching clinic this summer. The event will be held at Lumberjack Arena on the Cal Poly Humboldt campus on August the 3rd from 3 to 6 p.m. According to a press release announcing the clinic, all levels are welcome and all sports. More details about speakers and format will be announced closer to the date. And rounding out another busy week for North Coast sports, local racing fans were treated to two nights of action at the Redwood Acres Raceway over the weekend, with races on Friday and Saturday nights because of the Redwood Acres fairs. Jeremy Doss of Upper Lake enjoyed a big weekend, winning Boat Weekend Legends main events. As usual, the weekend action of fair racing concluded with the always popular boat race, with Tad Miller claiming the victory. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr and Michael McCaskill. And thanks to our reporters, Julian Jackson, Christina Anastad, and Ray Hamill. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.